Test 1-2. Testing.
What?
Morning news. Begun by commentary. Important commentary essential to the understanding of Marxist dialectical materialism is essential. The nature of theoretical tasks. Quotations will not do it. If they did, we would undoubtedly have won socialism in the United States and all over the world by now. For example, every U.S. Marxist-Leninist is undoubtedly familiar with Lenin's famous comment, "Without revolutionary theory, there can be no revolutionary movement." Not too many people recall as readily the sentence following that, in which Vladimir Lenin contrasts this point of view with those who have an infatuation for the narrowest forms of practical activity, to which in our present circumstances we might also warn against an infatuation for the narrowest forms of theoretical activity. Theory is not spontaneous. Of course, making a revolution is in the first place and primarily a practical activity. Only religious and secular mystics believe that the revolution is in your head. Revolution is a struggle for power, and this is a most practical activity involving large numbers of people taking actions and employing force. Nevertheless, that revolutionary activity will not succeed. Indeed, those engaged will not even have a clear idea of their objectives unless the process is guided by scientific socialism, scientific theory manifesting itself in a political program and a strategic plan. But where will all this come from? A scientific theory capable of giving intelligent direction to the activity of millions and millions will not develop spontaneously out of daily life, no matter how much in a condition of oppression that daily life might be. In fact, the very state of oppression in all phases of the life of U.S. citizen prevents correct theory from emerging, because any deep-going plans that embraces all aspects of social life requires rigorous investigation and debate before it can be conceived, and wide application if it is to be properly tested. And the conditions of life among the most oppressed work against their developing the time. These conditions of life among the most oppressed work against their developing in time, developing the time, the energy, the faculties, and facilities to enable them to do it on their own. Nor will a scientific theory for revolution emerge out of the disparate groups of intellectuals consulting with each other on the basis of vaguely defined common assumptions or a general agreement on modus operandi, or that is, methodology. We can say that only a Marxist-Leninist party can produce the basic principles, long-term strategy, and political program which might deserve to be called scientific theory. But for us today, this really begs the question, since the task of bringing that party into being remains before us. What then is the strategic concept that should guide communists in this period, when the forming of a Marxist-Leninist movement must be the objective that guides the political work in USA, particularly where there is very little Marxist-Leninist substance? We have said that the principal aspect of this work at this time is theoretical. This is true. but the formulation is rapidly becoming inadequate. Now we must begin to define more precisely the nature of those theoretical tasks. In the process, we may help overcome some of the mystique that tends to surround theory in our movement and locate our theoretical work in a more practical context. It should also be emphasized that in locating theoretical work as a principle, at the present time, we in no way rule out the necessity for ongoing practical political activity. The spontaneous movements of struggle among the masses, as well as the practical, even though limited, initiatives that communist groups can undertake at this time, likewise provide a school for the training and development of a communist cadre. First, of course, is the question of study. Marxist-Leninism is a worldview embracing the realm of traditional philosophy, human history, political economy, and revolutionary change. And we must understand that in Jonestown, the importance of developing this communist philosophy. It views the world dialectically and not empirically. What do I mean? That is, it looks at all phenomena in their motion and not simply as they are at a given moment. As developed by Marx, Engels, Lenin, Stalin, Mao, and many others, Marxist-Leninism has been a way of both understanding the world and changing it. In fact, many of the richest contributions to the body of thought called Marxism-Leninism have been developed in the course of urgent, violent revolutionary struggle. Knowledge and mastery of this great theoretical legacy should be an objective of all Marxist revolutionaries. Classical theory will not solve the problems of the present, but it provides a theoretical underpinning for understanding contemporary phenomena and also supplies the developing cadre with the ideological equipment they will need in order to develop their own necessary theoretical work. At times in library news, you may slow down the tape or stop so people can digest what they're hearing. To strive for knowledge and mastery of Marxism-Leninism, however, is a lifelong task. Likewise, there will always be new people coming into the movement with only a limited knowledge of Marxist-Leninist theory, like we have in our own movement, some who have even an idealistic, impractical, and even a mystical approach to Marxism, which is not substance and will always fail one in a revolutionary time of crisis. One can go too far into the realms of violence without thinking. A good balance of the thinking and violence seems to be taking place in Italy with the Red Brigade. Brilliant thinking that invades insurance companies and gets information as to who the richest people in Italy are that are violating their own capitalist laws by investing abroad for insurance policies, then knowing who they can get. Some are not kidnapped, they're just intimidated by a note. We know where your daughter is. We know what nursery school. We know your plans. And so many rich people, really not that concerned about capitalism other than their own selfishness, which is the contradiction that will bring capitalism down, actually contribute to the Red Brigade just to keep the Red Brigade off their ass, as it were. Well, we've got to get knowledge and mastery of Marxist-Leninism, but it's a lifelong task. Likewise, there will always be new people coming into the movement with only a limited knowledge of Marxist-Leninist theory. Therefore, while study may be the principal theoretical task before we who are communist at a particular period, this must be a relatively brief period, not that study comes to an end, but after an initial period the study of classical Marxism, Leninism must become subordinate to other theoretical and practical work, revolutionary achievements like we are now seeing in Jonestown. Produce instead of talk. There's so many communists that we've seen in the United States that never produce anything in substance. Marxist-Leninist organizations. Is the study of Marxism-Leninism today, therefore, the principal theoretical task of the communist? Although it was for several years, we must say that this is no longer the case. Evidence for this is to be found in the fact that the study group form has, by and large, become outmoded in the movement. Study groups, of course, continue to exist and should, particularly in Jonestown, at the end of the workday, so we know what we are fighting for. And new ones are constantly coming into being. While this was a new and rising phenomenon of a few years ago, it is no longer the case. Today, the new and rising phenomenon is in organizations of Marxist-Leninists. Some of these are national organizations, some local. But it is obvious that there are thousands of Marxist-Leninists in the United States who are now demanding a higher organizational form than the study group. Hopefully, however, systematic and guided study of Marxism-Leninism will go on in these organizations so that there can really be a strong communist movement, as also there must be a strong socialist movement and a strong free trade union movement if fascism and genocide and eventual nuclear war is to at all, by any chance, be hoped to be stopped. And there's no chance, not hardly a snowball's chance in hell, particularly that nuclear war can be stopped. Another critical theoretical task before the Marxist-Leninist has been the necessity to draw the lines of ideological demarcation between themselves and various expressions of bourgeoisie. That's B-O-U-R-G-E-O-I-S, ideology in the ranks of the left. First of all, revisionism, but also Trotskyism, anarchism, and social democracy. While this task is far from being completed, we can say that in broad outline, its principal objectives have been accomplished. There does exist today a widely held critique of the principal errors of these retrograde tendencies. It is also true that these tendencies towards revisionism, Trotskyism, anarchism, and social democracy, in varying degrees, continue to exercise a dangerous influence on the movement in USA. But these take more of a hidden or indirect form than an explicit attack on the fundamental principles of communism, Marxism, Leninism. We must also recognize that the whole study group phenomena was itself a significant manifestation of the struggle against revisionism and the other tendencies mentioned. Thousands of people went back to the work of Marx and Lenin, in particular Lenin, as well as other revolutionary thinkers, precisely because their ideas and discoveries had been abandoned or distorted or slandered by the dominant left tendencies, liberal left tendencies of the 60s. At the same time, no Marxist-Leninist can be satisfied with the level of understanding reached so far around these questions. All too often, the critique of these tendencies is ritualistic and superficial, making it all the more possible for their ideas to come into the movement again wearing less obvious clothes. A correct definition of our theoretical task in this area, then, is the necessity to deepen our critique of these incorrect tendencies. And again, what are those incorrect tendencies that we need to look for and be aware of, constantly on vigilant battle against? Anarchism, revisionism, Trotskyism, and social democracy. A correct definition of our theoretical task, then, is a necessity to deepen our critique of these incorrect tendencies, with particular emphasis on revisionism. Revisionism is the most dangerous enemy. Trotskyism is an enemy. Anarchy, is an enemy. Social democracy, but so much revisionism. Left opportunism, a third important theoretical challenge to Marxist-Leninists, has been the struggle against what has variously been called dogmatism, left opportunism, and flunkyism in our movement. This struggle has led to an outright organizational break between those forces upholding a proletarian worker international line and those following an objectively class collaborationist path based upon their adherence to China's foreign policy. But while the international wing of the Marxist-Leninist forces, to its great credit, refused to follow the path that led others to becoming the objective allies of their own bourgeoisies, we cannot say that it has thoroughly resolved some of the important theoretical questions which this struggle brought to the foreground. Chief among these, of course, is an independent Marxist-Leninist analysis of the socialist nations of the world. The greatest enemy to Marxist-Leninism today, though, is the class collaborationist path based upon the adherence to China's nationalistic communism, its renegade foreign policy that openly cooperates with U.S. capitalism in spite of the good domestic policies that we have seen in many instances in China. The dire consequences of China's international line were reason enough to exercise caution in the thesis of capitalist restoration. But this, in turn, has led to an increasingly embarrassing silence on the question of other socialist nations. It has also led in some quarters to an underestimation of the role of hegemonist superpower in the world today that can develop in some socialist countries, as well as to let up in the struggle against revisionism in any form. That's why we're glad to hear that Czechoslovakia, East Germany, and the Republic of Yemen, communist, are assisting in the Red Brigade. Not only theory, but practical works, where change is being made. The Christian Democratic Party split by proving to the world that capitalists do not care about their own, like Aldo Moro, 5 times elected Prime Minister of Italy, who wasn't worth the substitution or exchange of one humble black or poor socialist political prisoner in a jail. It's divided the party. It's brought less dedication of capitalists. It's brought fearful lack of financial support from financial rich circles to the capitalists, because capitalists are highly narcissistic for the most part, except perhaps those in the Trilateral Commission who know that they are the greatest war criminals of all and face an instant justice in any revolution. A definition of our movement's principal theoretical task in this area then might be the necessity to strengthen our critique of China's foreign policy from a firm anti-revisionist perspective, guarding especially against the tendency to make right opportunist errors or to adopt an eclectic view which does not sharply differentiate among different incorrect tendencies. A second necessary theoretical task is the summing up of the principal errors made by the principal groups and tendencies who at one time composed the new communist movement. There has been considerable debate as to how this task should be approached, but Mao's sage advice that the correctness or otherwise of the ideological and political line decides everything offers sound guidance in this respect, in spite of China's incorrect application of Mao and the terrible, disgraceful way they have treated Mao's wife, who would have led China back into the international arena. Border clashes, incidentally, are still continuing along the border of China and the Soviet Union, and China is still very strong on radio taping that nuclear war between USSR and China is unavoidable and is soon forthcoming. Still, even if this is not our movement's principal theoretical task, although clearly it must be pursued, all that has been mentioned so far is old business, however uncompleted it may be. but something else is now emerging. A new urgency is beginning to make itself felt, although it is barely recognized as such yet. It comes out of the felt needs of the study groups, the settling of accounts with ideological deviations and incorrect lines, and it comes out of the beginning forms of organizations towards a new Communist Party. And it is this necessity to begin to formulate the rudiments of the general political line on which the new or reconstituted Communist Party will be founded. Involved in this are the thorough and concrete investigation and analysis of the objective conditions of U.S. monopoly capitalism today and its interaction with the rest of the world. Our forces must begin to study and make scientific appraisals, and not simply in an agitational way, of the current status and long-term prospects of the U.S. fascist economy, the bourgeoisie, political parties, class relationships and strengths in the USA, political realities and currents in the working class, main political trends in the movements of the oppressed nationalities, tendencies towards fascism that are so obvious, and much more. Need for analysis of United States workers is desperate. Especially important is an in-depth analysis of the U.S. working class today, with particular attention to the industrial working class, or what we know as the proletariat. Such an analysis must take up the multinational character of the working class, role of women workers, status of the unemployed, movements toward organizing the unorganized, role of the trade unions and the trade union bureaucracy, and some estimate of the nature of backward consciousness in the working class, particularly in relation to racism that is so pronounced in the working class in USA, and sexism, and their strong currents of anti-communism that is frighteningly, dangerously leading to the destruction of USA. This investigation and analysis is, of course, only one aspect of the formulation of a general line, and many other questions are involved, including an historical assessment of the communist movement in the United States. Space does not permit a further elaboration at this time of the many specific tasks connected to the development of general political line for a Marxist-Leninist party. Suffice it to say that what is being put forward here is an attempt to give concrete and practical definition to what is meant in saying that theoretical work is primary in our communist, Marxist-Leninist building today. It is primary, no question of that. It is primary. News has it that French saber jets under U.S. military assistance, a $40 million now contingency sum has been given by Carter to try to bomb into the Stone Ages, particularly the families of the Katanganese revolutionaries who have penetrated deeply into Zaire. Great concern kills the USA, as some 88 white people have been killed. BBC, even Voice of America, all the white, the capitalist countries are going over and over about the horror of U.S. citizens and European citizens that have been caught in the revolution. But the revolution has penetrated from Angola, where Katanga was forced out of Zaire by U.S. imperialists and their puppets, into a life something like the Palestinians that were forced out of their homelands by the Zionists and the USA that tried to divide the Jews from the working class movement. They have finally penetrated out of their caves and the refugee camps from Angola and are driving, wedging in, taking several cities, several radio stations. They are determined that their nation will once again be theirs and be free. Katanga is now called Ushaba. It is indeed a province of Zaire, which is a puppet regime of fascist USA run by the terror dictatorship of Mobutu. This gives an idea of the attitude towards homosexuals in the United States. New York Times. Payment of some $55,000 was approved under the Comprehensive Employment and Training Act, CETA, last November for the Trans Experience Center in Coconut Grove to assist it in support of gay, bisexual, and heterosexual alternative lifestyles. Only $4,500 of the grant was sent. However, before outraged protests forced cancellation of the grant, the CETA program was supposedly created to train the unemployed, but its purposes, said the Los Angeles Times and the New York Times, have frequently been perverted. In Los Angeles, for instance, the Gay Community Services Center was presented with $640,000 in CETA money to instruct the public about the happy lifestyles of homosexuals. Elsewhere, it is the same, as syndicated columnist Nick Dimesh reported not long ago. Dimesh noted, for example, in the New York Times that in Rochester, New York, the Gay Alliance of Genes, G-E-N-E-S-E-E County, New York, got a $35,000 grant, though it took a city council debate to improve the lives and opportunities of the local faggots. That's horrible to see racism, sexism to that degree, that they would use that word. Midge Constanza, President Carter's ombudsman, spoke out publicly for the gay request in New York. The National Congress of Neighborhood Women got money to pay the salaries of their group, the National Gay Task Force, and the Militant National Organization for Women. Total cost, $2.5 million. It is not enough for the faggots, that's the way it's written in the New York and Los Angeles Times, to swish about their own purses. They are now into the taxpayers' pockets as well. Carter, since after the biting news attacks, has backed off from any support of assistance to gays in rehabilitations, psychiatric treatment, or any other type of programs that might benefit this oppressed minority. Eritrea, Ethiopia still holds its line. It is not invading further, but it is holding its line. Somalia, Ethiopia is inside the Somalian territory. After USA and renegade China's imperialist power tried to invade. But the Cubans, in spite of U.S. protests of breaking off all trade agreements, all negotiations on SALT, as Carter has, and his lackeys, and the transnationals in the Trilateral Commission, again, many don't understand the Trilateral Commission, primarily conceived by Rockefeller, the big, big, big multinationals. It is made up mostly of USA business people and, of course, all of the Carter administration, and attempts to really govern in these last stages of senile monopoly capitalism, European capitalism, American capitalism, and Japanese capitalism. Very few Asians are represented. That's why Sun Moon got into some difficulty in his religious fanaticism, his fascist fanaticism. But his brand of fascism, you see, Sun Moon, the Unification Church, does not blend into the will of the Trilateral Commission. And he's the wrong color. Racism is rampant in the Trilateral Commission. So Sun Moon is a deviant from the right. And the deviations of the right are feared as much by the Trilateral Commission as the deviation of the left. They want the apathetic middle in which there's total indifference, despair, apathy, the feeling you can do nothing but follow the line that is constantly bombarded, that the Trilateral Commission decides through its great television corporations, its newspaper magnates, that its line will be followed. That is its will. It's the god in these last stages of capitalism. And as I said, every member of the Carter administration or any administration is forced to join the Trilateral Commission. You need to understand that dreadful upper echelon elitist ruling element of monopoly capitalism. It was the Trilateral Commission that decided that Aldo Moro must die, that no political prisoner would be exchanged for him, even though he was a member of the Trilateral Commission. Primarily, the power behind the Trilateral Commission is still U.S. capitalist. Afghanistan continues to reform its government and draws closer to the Soviet Union. Cambodia has been driven back out of Vietnamese territory after it penetrated again with Chinese backing. The border is calm between Vietnam and China at this moment, as Soviet backing has always been staunch. One thing one can say, the Soviet Union has been on the avant-garde of supporting liberation movements the world over. The Philippine Islands, in spite of Marcos's return from ill health and his wife Imelda negotiating with the Soviets about nuclear reactors, a continued dialogue is going on with the Philippines and the Soviet Union. Strange bedfellows. That's the contradiction of capitalism. The capitalists don't trust each other, and so they're turning to the Soviet Union, and the Soviet Union is wise enough to know that the end justifies the means, to try to work economically to some degree to pull away the Philippines. And the Philippine leader, the dictator Marcos, is almost pressured into dealing with the communist Warsaw Pact, because the majority of his opposition, strong rebellion, is growing throughout the Philippine Islands, and it is all Marxist-Leninist. All the parties of resistance are Marxist-Leninist, and so I guess he's concluded you're going to have to deal with the Soviet Union and U.S. capitalism. The Trilateral Commission always shows its arrogance and racism by dealing shoddily with the Philippines, even though Marcos is a good capitalist dictator. They were prepared to give him a leaky nuclear reactor that had been outlawed in USA and was established on a fault line. The Soviet Union are humane people, and they at least are going to put a nuclear reactor without the potential of helping the Philippines to build a nuclear war capacity or nuclear arsenal. And the agreement includes that Soviet aides must remain in tight control of the nuclear reactor. That's one safeguard that the Soviets have looked to that USA has abandoned. That's why most scientists feel by 1980 a nuclear war will be upon us, because the arms race is out of control. Nuclear reactors are everywhere, and people can make bombs if they have a nuclear reactor. Simple enough. Other news has it that Namibians have been able to kill several of the occupying army of the Union of South Africa. The Patriotic Front continues to gain ground little by little in troubled Zimbabwe. Brazilian rebels, Marxist rebels, have practically taken over whole sections of the northeast of Brazil. As Brazil is greatly troubled, the military dictatorship that is modified, again, the Soviet Union has been wise enough to play on its fears, because the Brazilian government is mostly black. And even though fascistic, it has been mistreated by the Trilateral Commission because it's the wrong color. So the Soviet Union has moved in with some forms of aid, wisely enough, and Brazil's in a terrible, troubled condition with its drought, the worst drought in its history in southern Brazil. So the rebel insurgencies, the communist revolutionaries, are maybe being active all below us, all below our southern border here in Guyana. Chile continues to rock and reel as trade union strikes are prevailing, teacher strikes. Elements of the armed forces are rebelling against General Pinochet. He's been forced to release political prisoners. He's been forced to lessen some of the terrible fascist laws. He's been forced to bring in civilians into his government. Fascism, time clock shows that fascism will run out. spite of the nuclear hell that will probably precede it. Anarchists hold up in Philadelphia. Associated Press reported, and remember, some of this has a capital slant. Last month, the police in Philadelphia had blocked a band of armed black bandit anarchists. Now, that's Associated Press. That shows you the racism of the U.S. press services. In an attempt to starve them out, the anarchists are members of a revolutionary group which calls itself MOVE, and they have been holed up in a rundown three-story house in West Philadelphia since last May, when they confronted the police with automatic rifles. Sheldon Albert, city solicitor, says that there are at least 4 women, 8 children, and 20 adult male anarchists still inside the house. Some have been let out by mercy. The MOVE movement is much like the Red Brigade. Well, they're armed with explosives inside the house, and at least 14 weapons, some capable of automatic firing. And they've held out since May 11. That gives some point of what we could do if anyone was threatening our internal freedom here. We certainly got a better capacity to resist, and more bodies and more arms. Although we are not offensive in our design, we do not believe in violence, and our children must be taught that we do not have weapons only for hunting, and that's the truth. But we will protect our freedom. Obviously, we will fight for our freedom. For the last 11 months, police officers have had the house under 24 hours surveillance. Oh my goodness, this is since last May, a year ago, 12 months now. They've held up in that house at a cost of $1.2 million in overtime pay each month. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. MOVE has caused that kind of reaction. They've been housed up in that house for 24 hours a day for 1 year. Police have not been able to serve warrants, which were issued for the arrest of 18 members of MOVE on explosives and weapons charges, as well as charges of riot, disorderly conduct, and criminal conspiracy, all the laws that are made by the fascist Supreme Courts upheld, and all the court system, which is indeed an arm of the fascist state, just as the press is an arm of the fascist state. That is amazing that there can be that kind of solidarity amongst black people to hold out 1 year against the police state. Mayor Rizzo, you know, of Philadelphia, is forming a new whites rights. White is out of sight, and that kind of thing, a whites rights party that is gaining much support throughout the USA. He's a little fascist pig with his own CIA secret police in Philadelphia. The New York Times reported last June that the group says that all it wants is to be left alone. Now that's the cry of every people everywhere. We've made overtures to this group. It only came to public attention last month. I guess they couldn't hide it anymore. Says that all it wants to do is to be left alone, to pursue its own way of life. We might think of ways of negotiating their release and less of cost to the Philadelphia police. This includes keeping their children out of school. They do not want anything to do with capitalist education. And naked, even in the winter, sheltering a pack of 60 dogs and preaching to passerbys a revolutionary doctrine that would literally give America back to the Indians and abolish all governments from here to Peking and Moscow. Unfortunately, that's anarchism, and we're a little bit afraid of that. But we can sympathize with their distrust of government anyway. One young woman member was quoted in the Times article as saying that MOVE had set up chapters in Chicago. By the way, they're under house arrest in Chicago and Detroit, and they're also in New York and several other cities around the country. Residents of the racially mixed neighborhood say that MOVE members are obstreperous. This, of course, is a capitalist version, you know. The New York Times, physically filthy and potentially violent. Now, no, that's capitalist brainwashing. One woman asserted that many people in the area were frightened and disgusted by the anarchist. She asked not to be identified because she said, "My parents are European Jews who went through the Holocaust, and these people are like Nazis." Now that's New York Times brainwashing. They try to divide again the Jews from the blacks and all elements of the working class, and you've got to see that. I am giving you capitalist news, and you have to understand, I interpret it as much as I can. But bravo, salutations to move, at least for standing up and being counted. New York Times, particularly Murdoch Press and Hearst, is crying out against the communist lecturers that are going through the nation. Murdoch Press, New West, and Hearst was the one that attacked us. And began the attack that destroyed Synanon, the great drug rehabilitation cooperative in the Bay Area, and has now attacked Huey Newton till he's practically out of his mind, faces four charges of murder, conspiracy, and assault. They can't get him on one. They're determined to destroy that young black man. I wish he'd listened. We offered him to come here, and we've gotten him here in spite of protest. I wish he had stayed in Cuba, but he could not find himself able to adjust to speaking Spanish on new culture. And that's the trouble with some of you. You're going back to certain death, like our defector went back, and even willing to compromise with the embassy and tell lies. However, the head of the embassy called ingratiatingly, sweet as saccharine, trying to keep our goodwill. So our solidarity still is worth a great deal. Called Gene Brown in San Francisco and said, "We're just the same. I really love you folk. I'm kind of like part of your family." And he said the defector was indeed a person who was selfish, wanting to do their own thing. I guess they found that it made no real difference how much information they get from the defector. We will be here, that they have to come through all of us to get any of us, and that's our key. 1,000 strong, united we stand. That's the key. More protection than any people have on earth. 1,000 strong that you will have medical care. 1,000 strong that no one will take you away. And then your father standing strongly and boldly when they come, say, "No, you can't have anybody." When they arrest somebody in Georgetown, "No, you can't have them." And they always have released them. That's a power, a protection that needs to be educated in every class. Teachers, I demand it. And every home, every parent needs to educate. No one can come in and mug, rape, steal, hurt you, come at you with court suits, come at you and take you away to jails or concentration camps. That's a power, in spite of this defector being high up in our finances. That was a call late in the morning that we got on the radio. That's the head man that was out there, the head of, going to be now promoted to the head of the Guyana desk of the State Department. He was ingratiatingly kind and smooth and wanted our goodwill. It was obvious he did not want us to be troubled, in spite of the fact that she gave damaging and treasonous information against us. And I salute her family who have stood up so strongly under the onslaught and not even batted an eye by forgetting the defector and the traitor, because the defector has become a traitor. Anyway, the press of USA is concerned over communist tours of colleges. Claude Lightfoot, black man, blinded, field secretary of the Communist Party USA, recently made a triumphant tour of colleges in the Boston area. He was a guest of honor at a reception held by the Black Educators Alliance of Massachusetts, said the New York Post. Some 50 black educators showed up to hear Comrade Claude, including a district superintendent and 10 school principals. But that's nothing. But you see, even 50 people shake up the Trilateral Commission and the capitalist lackeys. Ewart Guinier, professor of Afro-American history at Harvard, we ought to remember him, to write him, E-W-A-R-T, capital G-U-I-N-I-E-R, at Harvard, and a veteran communist fronter, hosted a dinner for Lightfoot at the Harvard Faculty Club, which was attended by 50 members of the Progressive forces, that's in quote, like it's taking a dig. Among them, a state representative, a delegate from the Communist World Peace Council, and civil rights attorneys. After the dinner, Comrade Lightfoot gave an address, and that's making a bob, too, in quotes. He gave an address at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. Speaking at Simmons College, the Communist Party official, black man, maintained that the whole of American history needs to be rewritten. How would he know, said the press, he is black. He is blind, rather. Even their terrible prejudices against the disabled show. The accumulation of wealth in this nation was primarily made possible, said Lightfoot, by the genocidal mass murder slaughter of Native American Indian peoples and the brutal enslavement of African black peoples, the likes of which have no comparison in world history anywhere. This is a part of our national heritage that I hope you will join me in renouncing and rejecting, said the communist, Claude. See the smartville remarks. Lightfoot also spoke from the pulpit of the Community Church of Boston. We ought to remember them. We can learn a lot from our enemies, who to praise, and gave the keynote speech at the 8th anniversary celebration of the founding of the Young Workers Liberation League, youth arm of the Communist Party USA, which, of course, Communist Party USA is pro-Soviet and pro-Warsaw Pact. And as we know, the Soviet Union and the Cuban forces are the bravest and the most avant-garde of the Marxist-Leninist liberationists, and we uphold them. Lightfoot went on to say, in his disheveled clothes and tacky appearance, see the little cracks that they make, and this is one of the more broad-minded papers, he told the Young Reds, and I'm quoting from different papers, this is New York Times, all of the prerequisites are materially present for a resurgence of the struggles of the 60s for civil rights and peace. These struggles will dig deeper into the guts and intros of the system known as capitalism. We warn the American readers, said the New York Times, that we must be alerted to the communists being dignified by being allowed to travel to our best seats of learning. Sounds like McCarthyism, sounds like the old anti-communist movement being whipped up again. Teaching the party line is another column in the Los Angeles Times. The California State Board of Education is planning to investigate Roland Engel, a teacher at Alameda High School, who is a self-professed communist agitator and member of the Progressive Labor Party, which he describes as a communist organization that is more revolutionary than the American Communist Party. The flap began when Engel gave his class an assignment concerning the coal strike, which took the Communist Party line on labor conflict. Remember, this is the Los Angeles Times, totally unsympathetic to anything communistic. In fact, it would kill communists in the name of the Lord. The school called the assignment propaganda and critical...